CS case for our 10 o'clock call, and that is item number 365804, Bonnie Ferone versus Lansing Board of Water and Light.
Good morning, Your Honors. Michael Ferone, on behalf of the plaintiffs, should acknowledge that she's plaintiff to one count. Bonnie Ferone is in the courtroom. I'm going to try to reserve some time at the end. I know that's my responsibility. And I'd like to open with a quote from our Michigan Supreme Court. Quote, "A principle which underlies the use of all easements is that the owner of an easement cannot materially increase the burden of it upon the servient estate or impose thereon a new and additional burden." Close quote. That's Cruz die casting, quoted my brief, and this court said the same thing in Hayden v. Media One in 2007. And that's what this case is about. They want to turn our backyard into a swamp. And that's going to be a particular impact on my backyard. And they want to cause tens of thousands of dollars in damage. And by the way, they've never disputed that. They've never disputed the yard's going to be turned into a swamp. They've never disputed they're going to cause material damage to it. Those have never been issues that have been litigated below. They've accepted.
Quick question on that. And I'm genuinely curious. I'm not making any suggestion here, but how come there can't just be low-lying like bushes or some other foliage planted there that's not going to rise up to the power lines?
Well, the yard is on a slope, and it's a big yard. It's not an average city lot. It's in Lansing. And according to our arborist, if you have, and they're the ones talking about ice storms and water and moisture, there's a lot of large trees back there, and the water is not going to uptake through the trees. And sure, we could, and we will. If we lose, we're going to have to we'll plant trees, do something. How long is it going to take for those trees to grow is the problem. A bush isn't going to uptake the water the tree is going to. There's a solution, but the solution is put on us at a cost of whatever. By the time those trees grow large enough to uptake the water, I don't know if I'm going to be dead, but I'm probably not going to be there. I'll be an even older man than I am. And think about it. They ran those wires through the trees. So, you know, when we bought the house, they were fine with it. The policy doesn't change until years later. And then another 7 years go by before they show up and say they want to enforce the policy. And in the meanwhile, their then general manager, Peter Lark, said, "You're fine." No, they've never disputed that. They said, "You're fine, just trim your own trees, whatever."
And you did trim your own trees.
And we did.
At no small expense.
And it's continued. In opposing counsel's brief, in fairness to him, I don't know if he would know this, he states, "We haven't trimmed the trees since 2019. That's actually not true. In November 2nd, 2023, we trimmed the trees, $8,945. Save a tree, SAVATREE of Grand Rapids, if he wants to check. I'll cooperate, I'll give him the receipts. I'm not going to lie in front of a court on a record." So we've continued to trim the trees. I've spent a lot of time in my reply brief talking about the mistakes and errors, and, you know, he's got the utility line, the service drop at issue in the, I guess, count five running over, rather that it, that runs over, the one that runs over my garage. He's got that supplying power to my house. He says I want to have it removed. I've never asked to have that service drop removed. I asked to have it lifted. I've talked about his mistakes. I've talked about trial counsel in his final opinion refers to my property with having steam heat. He's not even talking about, we don't have steam heat at our house. I'd like to this morning talk about a mistake I may have made in my reply brief where I state that the it was an opinion letter from the Michigan Public Service Commission to the city of Lansing, wasn't put in the file. I don't know if it was or not, but I'm going to assume I'm wrong about that and apologize to the court. I'm going to assume that this letter from the Michigan Public Service Commission is part of the file, so I apologize for that. And I'd like to make a few comments about it because I think it goes right to the heart of this case, and it applies to all of the, you know, industry standards they've tried to put forth in front of the court. First, if you look at that letter, now it's a letter from the Michigan, the city of Lansing wants to ask the Michigan Public Service Commission for their opinion. They're free to do that, even though the Michigan Public Service Commission doesn't regulate the Board of Water and Light. I don't have no problem with that. And so that's what happened. And I assume you have that letter. Problem number one, if you look at what the Michigan Public Service Commission says, they never adopt the standards that the board has put forward. The board's policy is cut a 6-foot swath. We don't care about the health of the tree. We don't care what it's going to do to the yard. We don't care about anything. 6-foot swath around every secondary line, period.
Well, they do care. I mean, they care about keeping power going to their customers, right? Wasn't that the point, that there was this somehow once-in-a-lifetime storm resulted in a bunch of recommendations for them to...
They don't care about the effect on the individual yard. They don't care. If it has a unique impact on my yard, they don't care. That's their policy, 6-foot swath. Let me pause. I'll come back to the Michigan Public Service Commission letter and address what you think Your Honor is getting at. Okay. Their concerns. Yes, they had a huge number of power outages in the ice storm of 2013. They were embarrassed by it. Government officials, you have all that in the brief already. Right. I'm not going to re-argue all that. But I will say this. I do want to say this, not in the brief. Let's think about their argument, because really what this case is about is, you know, the ice storms, power lines coming down, does that impact dead vegetation? Is dead vegetation or dying or unhealthy vegetation the problem? Or should we distinguish between that and a living tree? Because, you know, we go to our northern counties up north, especially we get to Mason, Leelanau, Traverse, miles and miles of pristine forests. If healthy tree limbs were falling down right and left due to ice storms, it doesn't happen. A healthy tree limb is not as susceptible to an ice storm as an unhealthy tree limb. And if you go back and look at the CRT, Community Review Team report, quoted in my brief, that's what they said. They said to the board, if you would have followed, and actually the Michigan Public Service Commission said the same thing, if you would have followed the policies you had in place up to 2014, this wouldn't have happened. But they didn't. They didn't do any trimming. So if you came into Lansing, that's what caused the ice storm. They let these dead trees, dying trees, stand. And so they got humiliated in 2014. And their response was, I don't know if it's to punish the people in Lansing, but that's what it feels like. The response was, we're just going to cut a swath 6 feet around every line, period. You know, we don't care about the health of the tree, anything. And, you know, it's in our brief. That's what they did wrong in 2014. They had a policy in 2014. It was an award-winning policy, if it had been followed. And their policy was, we're going to cut, trim dead vegetation. But they didn't. And that's not Mike Frone saying it. That's in the Community Review Team report, which you have. They let it go. They let all these dead trees, I don't know why, but, and so then 2014 comes, they overreact. So, and they know that's a specious argument, that ice impacts healthy limbs the same way it does an unhealthy limb. They know that's nonsense, and that's why they came up with their second specious argument, which is even, I'm trying to be nice, but it's even more ridiculous, arcing. That, you know, and they're telling, all across the country, healthy trees are popping off in flames because of arcing off power lines. I mean, that it's crazy to anybody who has tried to start a fire in a stove or campsite that a healthy tree is susceptible to, healthy limb is susceptible to arcing. It's going to catch on fire and take down their line.
Also, aren't all the power lines that are at issue here in this case are secondary power lines, right? We're not talking about the power line that runs along the express easement behind the property.
True.
We're talking about secondary power lines.
True.
Your power line from that to your house goes out, it's not going to shut off the power to your neighbor or...
No, it'll affect four homes, including our own.
Oh, four homes, okay.
Four
homes.
Well,
right, the homes that are on that secondary, that receive power through those secondary power lines.
None of whom have asked them to do this. I mean, there's no affidavit. There's an affidavit from one neighbor who, you know, we did get. I don't like to involve my neighbors in things, but four homes, I can't say things that are off the record, but there's absolutely no evidence that they've asked this to be done or that they're happy about it being done. In fact, if it is done, that lower elevation goes down a little bit into our back neighbor's yards, one or both of whom have children, and that swamp's going to continue into their yard. So there's no public outcry to do this. In fact, the only public outcry that's in the record is in footnote 13, where you have that video showing neighbors upset about their policies. There's nothing in the record indicates the public has called for this. Arcing. Good luck trying to start a fire. Go out and pull down a healthy tree limb or branch and try to get it. It's difficult to start a fire with firewood, dried cordwood for fires. You got to have kindling, and so it's nonsense. And I can't help but say, you know, I noticed that we have these ongoing fires in Los Angeles, and I was struck, and I asked the court to look at this. Look at the aftermath. You see block after block of these homes reduced to cinders. And if you watch those videos or photographs, what do you see sitting between the cinder-filled homes? You'll find living, lush, green trees. It's not easy to catch a tree on fire, but that's what they've argued. Let's go back to the Michigan Public Service Commission report. The paragraph in question, it doesn't endorse their policies. What it says is, if you want to do it, good, go. We approve, go ahead, do it. It says that. It also says that in that same paragraph, page 27, that Bee Down Russell cites, it references the size, location, and condition of the tree. Well, that's not the board's policy. They ignore all those things. And it's actually worse than that. It's worse than that because the Michigan Public Service Commission doesn't regulate the board, but they do regulate other utilities. And guess what? The Michigan Public Service Commission doesn't require the utilities they do regulate to cut all overhang. So think about that. I mean, think about that. You've got the board, and you've got their top expert, Bee Down Russell, telling you that that letter from the Michigan Public Service Commission is the standard because they approve of what we're doing. So that's the industry standard. So we have to do this when the Michigan Public Service Commission doesn't require its own utilities to do it. You know, they could promulgate a regulation tomorrow and tell all the utilities that fall under them, cut all overhang, and they have it. And they hold that out as, that is, I'm trying to be nice, but that is maybe the most disingenuous argument that I've heard in 30 years of practicing law. And it's even worse than that, because let's just pretend. It isn't true, but let's just pretend for a moment that they have proven an industry standard, and they have proven that the industry standard is to cut all overhang. So what? The case law requires a weighing of the interests of both parties. And their argument is, if you put up with the industry standard, which they've never produced, and put it on, you know, one side of the scale, that's it. Weighing, no need to weigh. You know, industry standard, your law, you suffer with the swamp, you go deal with it. That's not the law in Michigan. Not if the industry standard carries no force of law, which even the ones they purport to put in front of the court carry no force of law. A letter from the Michigan Public Service Commission, that carries no force of law. And so even if they had produced an industry standard, which they haven't, you still have to, the trial court was still required to weigh out the interests of the parties. It said, you know, gee, maybe in this particular yard, you know, the cutting of these trees, which they admit will kill them. You have that letter from their general counsel. There's no dispute. The type of trimming they want to do will kill these trees. It's going to cause a swamp, all right? And the board doesn't dispute that. It's going to cause, in addition to that, because our realtor looked at all this before the arborist said the yard would become a swamp. So in addition to that, it's going to cause at least $30,000 in damage, maybe more, now that we know there's going to be a swamp there. You know, in this particular case, you know, weighing the interests out, can't you just do? I mean, they're willing to pay to trim their own trees. They came up with an alternative plan through their arborist. Wouldn't a reasonable weighing of the interest be, why don't you just do that? You know, cut the dead vegetation. That's the real risk here. Living trees don't catch on fire through arcing. Living trees don't often, limbs don't come falling down from living trees left and right because some ice gets on them. Why don't you just do what the Fronds are willing to do and what they've been willing to pay to do? You know, that would be a reasonable weighing of the interests. That's all I'm asking the court to do. That's all we ask the circuit court to do. A few little bit of time I have left. I wanted to talk about a couple of cases that are not in the briefs, which might be of help to the court.
Are they published or unpublished?
Well, one of them is published, the other is unpublished, but it's a Michigan case, and it's a response, and I say that because opposing counsel, I won't go into it but I think it may be helpful. Opposing counsel cited three unpublished non-Michigan cases, and I noticed that. I think that tells you, when he's citing unpublished non-Michigan cases to support his claim that a utility has unfettered discretion, I think that screams out that there's no law in Michigan that supports his position. There is one unpublished case, which I think is, might be helpful, Consumers Energy versus Storm, docket number 350617, an August 2022 case. It's procedurally different from this case because it involved a publicly traded utility, so the Uniform Condemnation Procedures Act applied. But I, you know, so procedurally different. The homeowners in that case actually prevailed in the circuit court. But there's some interesting language in it, according from this court's opinion. Plaintiff, that's the utility in that case, stated in the complaint that its purpose in acquiring rights to defend its property was to ensure the safe and reliable operation and maintenance of the Lindbergh-Phillip line. It stated that to accomplish this purpose, by the way, what case, that sounds like this case, it was requesting an easement to maintain the vegetation on defendant's property within a certain distance of the lines, and enter defendant's property as necessary to perform and maintain construction on the lines. And then continuing to quote from this court's opinion, because this shows a court and a trial court focused on what they should be focused on, correctly interpreting the word interfere. Interfere doesn't mean whatever we want as the utility. Interfere means, has there ever been an incident in our yard in which the power was put at risk or was interfered with? There hasn't been. There hasn't been. They try to argue that, the twig fell on, I've seen the photographs, twig fell on my neighbor's yard, cut off the power during a really serious ice storm where a lot of people did lose their power. Twig, branch, whatever you want to call it, fell on his line. He called him, all right? But you have his affidavit. He never lost power over that. And twigs and branches are going to fall. We've never disputed that. You have trees. Twigs and branches are going to fall. These lines, even that was a service drop, they're not that sensitive that if a little branch falls on it, they go off. They disconnect. I mean, they're not that sensitive. In any event, this court continues. The property did not have a history of vegetation affecting the line or necessity of repairs. It, the circuit court, then determined that, on the basis of these facts, plaintiff's acquisition of an easement was not necessary to ensure the safe and reliable operation and maintenance of the line. In some form, they've been running the lines through our property for over 100 years, not in the current configuration, but and there's so no evidence there's ever been a power outage.
All right, so let me ask that. Sure. When did this particular configuration
the strongest part or most interesting part of my brief. There's time goes on. There's one or two arguments. You know, I may have just abandoned.
It may not be, but can you give me a date?
No, I can't. What I can say is this. And I'll say two things. Number one. Well, what I'll say is this. I don't keep the records. I didn't put the poll up.
Right.
Their client did. They should have the records. They should have been able to come in and say that utility pole back there was put in and such and such
in
date.
In this configuration.
Well, what you can say is that in 2003 it wasn't there.
I can't say that
you
because
can say you've got a witness that has testified that the pole appears to be brand new.
I can't say that. In fact, it was their witness. It's the person they've held out as an expert, Ashley Thiel. That's their what they put forward as a utility expert arborist said. It looks like a new pole.
So the only thing we know for sure is that when the current homeowners moved in, it was there in 2007.
No, that's the tricky part because at Bonnie Frone's deposition, she got asked about it. She's not even a party to this count anymore. I'm not saying you can't quote her.
So let me ask about. Go ahead right. And finish that answer, but then let me.
Well, if he'd asked me, and frankly, I would also say go back and read her deposition. I don't think she says that. We believe that. Well, let me phrase it this way: if I saw those wires running in V-like, I wouldn't have bought the property. And so it appears, based on everything you've referenced, that the most likely the line, the pole rather, in the current configuration was put in that window between when we purchased the property and when we moved in. And if you look at that window, and it's in the brief, opposing counsel makes kind of a sarcastic line where I've admitted it's 15 years. If you go back and continue to read that paragraph, I explain there's a window there between moving in and earlier buying the property. It's not unusual. It's the difference between we bought it this spring, moved in, you know, in December. And so if you, that would have been the logical time for them to do that work. So
well, regardless,
that's all I have.
How could you ever have a power line that runs from the power pole to somebody's house and also argue that there's no permissive use? I mean, you'd have to argue that people didn't want power, right? Like against their protestations,
exactly.
You're supplying them
exactly.
Power.
Well, I think that's the more interesting issue, which there's no case law in Michigan. Can this ever become a prescriptive easement? I understand the word hostility is a term of art. I get it. Adverse? I mean, when you start to, as a court, start to say adverse, you know, that has a meaning. And at some point, we have to apply words ethically. And in the case law, adverse has a meaning. It's quoted in the brief. It means against another party's interests.
Yeah, you know, so it's against your interest to have power, apparently.
To string power. It is a permissive use. Now, if they had 15 years ago gone in and you know, cut a swath through my yard, well, that's a different story. Then maybe the law of prescriptive easements is something, you know, to look at. But stringing a utility line to a house to supply power is adverse to the homeowner. It's against their interest. They could bring, the case law says what adverse means is they could bring a cause of action against the other party, really. I'm gonna sue you because because I moved into this house and there's power, you've got power running into it. That's crazy, and I'm just asking the court to apply the word adverse, you know, in its normal meaning, and in the meaning that this court's already applied it in existing case law. And then finally, I think you had a question.
Yeah, I did have a question. Well, I think I had a couple more than one question. Okay, so you just said that your wife wasn't even a party to that count.
Well, she was. She was at the time she was deposed.
Well, that was my question, because it seemed to me that when, on the record, the court stated that it was dismissing counts 1, 2, 3, 4, and 6 because she was not on the deed.
Is the court dismissed her as a party.
To those counts.
Right.
Okay, so you're the only person, you're not challenging that ruling.
No, it was a strange thing because it had of no legal, well, no, I have not challenged it, I have not appealed it. I did challenge it in the circuit court, I have not appealed it.
Okay, so now, and Mr. Frohn, as you know, this is not my background, right?
Mine either.
I have to admit, this is my first case of this type. So what I'm struggling with is, you know, just figuring out actually what were the facts. And so talking about this trespass nuisance count, okay, you're saying that the service drop is on your property, but they're saying it's on your neighbor's property.
Right.
Where is it, and would you have a trespass nuisance if it was on your neighbor's property? Because trespass sounds to me like went on your property.
Right. You know, we don't have to worry about that because it runs over my garage. It runs over my property. It's very strange because be careful when you look at the final survey or whatever it was, they got filed in the circuit court. They took it out. Now, all the other service drops are in that survey, but the one that's at issue in this count, that would plainly show, if they left it in, it plainly show runs right across my garage. They removed it.
Your very neighbor's strange. Is across your garage?
What it does is there's that pole. There's that pole that was put in 1938. On the schematic in my brief...
See? Yeah, all of the pictures.
Let me do it this way.
Are truly not that helpful to me.
But they not to us. They change. Every schematic we got from the board has been different. But if you look at I think it's page 27 of my brief. I talk about there being a red pole and a white pole. Well, the red pole is, forget about that for now. That's the secondary line. There's a white pole that sits like that white button that sits. Off my property, but right adjacent, right next to on my side of our garage. And if you look at that white pole, so here's my garage, here's the Wiligorski's garage, and the wire runs right across both of them, plain as day, plainly right through the middle
okay,
of both
so you're
garages.
Saying that there's still, you can still satisfy the trespass aspect of that?
Well, I,
all right.
It's
I, and I don't want to run into your rebuttal time, so.
Okay. The only other case I would, I'll save some time for rebuttal.
The published case? Did you want
well,
to give us the published
Krieger,
case? Just give us the name.
Yeah, that's just Krieger. That's a case that involves all kinds of things that aren't before this court. It arises out of the Edenville Dam disaster, Court of Claims issues, on and on.
Oh, so, okay.
But it talks about takings law, and in that case, the
right.
utility company argued, this is quoting from the opinion, defendants, the utility company, focused their remaining, this goes to the takings count, the remaining challenges to the viability of the inverse condemnation claim. Defendants argue that these claims are legally defective in two respects. Defendants did not take affirmative actions directly aimed at the plaintiff's property, therefore the takings claim fails, and
right.
our Michigan Supreme Court in Krieger said that's not the law.
We got that one.
And
okay.
They make that argument in their brief.
All right. Thank you. That answered my question.
Good morning. Randy Kleiman for Lansing Board of Water and Light. This has to be a somewhat unusual case where the party is also the attorney in a civil case and is standing before you relating to you facts, not all of which appear in the motion underlying in the opinion and order and or in the briefs. By way of example, talking about having taken out a line, there's nothing in the briefs, there's nothing in the motion, there's nothing in the record at all with regard to that. So I feel like part of my time today should be spent being available to answer questions or respond to the things that have been said today, because there is a lot of confusion about this case, and we understand that. It's hard to understand if you're not on the ground. We add pictures.
Well, in that case, can you explain to us how it could be adverse to this homeowner to be getting power from the power line to their house? How is that not a permissive use? Doesn't every customer want that power?
Well, there are two answers to that. First is that's not what permissive is under the law when it comes to these easements and this use. It is the Board of Water and Light's use of the line. It is not the property owner's. The law is that it is the board's use that is not been given specific permission to apply.
Permission but from who?
From anyone. This would be the property
including
owner
the people
case.
That are getting the power.
Right. But more importantly to that issue, I think, is that as
So you're saying they should have sent you a letter when you first started supplying power saying, I see you're supplying me with power. I want you to keep doing that.
No, I think it you don't focus on the property owner at that point. If you focus on the board's supply or the board's, in this case, we call them the Board of Water and Light. In this case, their equipment. But let me finish the more important thought and the more obvious, and that is, as Mr. Ferrone indicated, the lines, and I can clear up a lot of the confusion about the facts. I've lived this case since pretty close to the beginning. So the pole in question is in the backyard, behind the backyard of Ferrone's. It's right off the Ferrone's property, and there are lines that create a V heading from a south to a north direction. The line on the right, and my right, as I describe it to you, your left, services the Beaches, which are to the east of the Ferrone's. The other line goes over Ferrone's and it serves two homes, Wiligorski and I forget the name of the other property owner, as well as Ferrone's. That's the secondary service line. So there is other Board of Water and Light equipment serving people who are not the Ferrone's that crosses the Ferrone's airspace over their property.
That's three other homes?
That's correct. Well, yes, Beachy's on the one hand and then two on the other side plus the Ferrone's. And that's displayed in the survey that Judge Jamo ordered that was done by the board. That's clearly displayed. So it's not just a matter of Ferrone's, and as you focus on the secondary line as opposed to what we call a service drop, which goes to a specific property, there is a secondary line that does service other homes. So the argument that is permissive is in fact not really, if it is that, oh, the homeowners gave permission, well, no, not as to the secondary line at least. So.
The secondary line that goes to the neighbors and doesn't feed power to the Ferones.
Right, right. And as long as we're on that topic while I'm remembering that, the...
Well, couldn't, in that, if that's the case, couldn't the court indicate that there's a prescriptive easement as to that power line, the one that goes to the neighbors, but there's no prescriptive easement as to the one for which the Ferones have obviously given permissive use?
No, they haven't obviously given permissive use. Nonetheless, the one line services Beachy's and doesn't service Ferones at all, crosses Ferones. The other line's a secondary line that services Ferones as well as two neighbors. There are drops from the secondary line. Okay, the and this relates to the trespass nuisance. I'll kind of take these things as they're in order. This isn't a well presented necessarily in terms of order, but I'll take them. So a gentleman named Justin Wilson, who works for the board, was at the site when there were discussions about trying to resolve the tree trimming issue with Ferones and the board. Mr. Wilson glanced up and noticed a service drop which was over Ferone's garage and said, geez, that looks a little low. That was about the extent of it. That precipitated the claim that there is this trespass nuisance, this danger that the board refuses to repair.
Right, 34 and a half inches, right?
Right. So what happened subsequently is Mr. Wilson went out, he actually measured the distance and found it to be within specification and to be fine. He wrote a letter, end of issue. That, frankly, is the end of the issue. The issue about the service drop at the neighbors is that it appears in a photograph, and it was mistaken by Mr. Ferone, mistakenly described as being over his garage, but in fact it wasn't, it was over the neighbors. That's the issue with respect to the neighbors. There is no dangerous service drop. As you might imagine, if we're this concerned about vegetation and the effects of vegetation, which are real and which do cause the majority of power outages, if we're concerned about that, we'd be concerned about that service drop and it would be repaired. But that's the neighbor's issue. That's not Ferone's issue.
Okay, as I recall, they just said to him, well, make a complaint or call customer service if you think the service drop is too low.
Well, he always had that ability to initiate a complaint and would go through that
so
process.
You're saying as to the neighbors, the service drop, all of these service drops are in compliance.
That's correct.
Okay.
And there's no evidence they're not. It's asserted that they're not, but there is absolutely, and that's this case, there is no evidence in the record that it is not in compliance. There is no one who, other than perhaps Mr. Ferone, who will come in and say, these are not in compliance. Mr. Wilson, on the other hand, said, these are in compliance.
Right, because you would think that the board would be concerned about addressing that.
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely. That's what this is about.
Okay.
You know, what was the quote?
So at some point, can you talk to me about a date?
I'm sorry?
A date?
Yeah, so here it is. This is how it goes. As you might imagine, records from 1919 are somewhat difficult to find.
Right. There's no, this is to the point that there's no actual easement. Is that what I'm understanding?
Sure. There is, well, no, there is an easement. It's called a prescriptive easement.
Okay.
There's no written easement. That
right.
We can find.
I'm sorry. Yes. You are correct.
So neighborhoods in Lansing. We had another case. Crittenden was a case that was referred to. That's called the
right.
Arts and Estates in East Lansing. It was developed, imagine 100 years ago, developing these subdivisions. Arts and Estates was developed roughly at the same time as the subdivision that the Ferones property is in. Ferones property was platted in 1970. Arts and Estates was in 1990. In 1917, the plat did not have any easements for utilities, electric power. In 1919, Arts and Estates had an easement, it wasn't a good one, but it had an easement in the plat. The Plat Act, the Subdivision Control Act, now requires that all utilities be granted easements in the plat. The reason is that the board just began supplying electric power about the same time these subdivisions were being developed. Okay, so
is that easement the primary easement that has the primary power line, or is it? Are you saying that it pertains to the primary and all the secondary.
Crittenden or in Verona?
No, that, that statute you just referenced.
The statute, the Subdivision Control Act.
Yeah.
That's, they
You just used the word easement, but I don't know if you mean the primary power line that runs, you know, behind all the properties, or if you're also talking about the secondary power lines.
Okay.
Secondary power lines are the ones that run from the primary power to the houses.
No, I understand what your question is. The Subdivision Control Act mandates that the plat have identified easements along the right-of-ways for all utilities and quasi-utilities like data and so on. And the point of that, and included in that mandate of an easement, is the right to trim vegetation. As you might, so in this case, Mr. Ferrone says they ran the lines through the trees. That's an example of a misstatement. It wasn't the case. You recall he also included in his brief a picture of a prior owner of the property in front of a blue spruce that is today probably 45 feet tall. In the picture, that tree's 8 feet tall. That's what happened out there. As with almost all developments, there are very few mature trees, and especially then, there were less mature trees. It was basically clear cut, and all of the trees that are now mature have grown up. The power supply has been there, and that's the point of these subdivisions. So when those subdivisions were developed, and by the way, the power pole is in the back and not at the street, and that's the same as in the Crittenden case in Artsin's. The power poles were in easements in Artsin in an easement, in this case not, and behind the houses as opposed to in the streets, probably for aesthetic reasons. But utilities learned, and they're still learning today, because of cases like this, that they need to get explicit easements. An explicit written easement that specifically says they can trim, and the issue in this case is overhang. It's what we call overhang. The explicit right to trim overhang is the issue that we're going after here, and it is the issue in this case. But the argument that the board just ran its lines through trees is it's not accurate. Those trees grew up. Those are mostly volunteers. There's no evidence that they were planted. They grew up into the lines. As long as we're on that topic, on the issue of trimming. If trees didn't need to be trimmed, why are they talking about doing trimming in the context of this case? Obviously, trees get trimmed all the time, but in the context of this case, there's testimony in the depositions that they trimmed to keep the trees away from power lines. There's an absolute acknowledgement that trees affect, that vegetation affects power lines. There isn't any question about that. But what we did is we had Dave Bolin, who is the chief operations officer, and we had Dr. Bedon Russell, who is a renowned expert in the area of vegetation management and power delivery from Texas, opine, and those in affidavits, right. They weren't deposed. Those affidavits are not specifically countered. If you look at the end of the affidavit of
what
each of them.
What about by his arborist?
I'm getting to that.
Okay.
Because the idea, you know, counsel said he's trying to be nice. There's a tone here. There's an undercurrent here.
We see it.
Absolutely. And the board gets it. It doesn't like destroying people's property. It doesn't like having to cut trees. It doesn't have a mandate or a corporate culture of going after specific property owners. It's trying to harden its delivery of electric power. It's not a personal
right.
thing.
So if you went out there and trimmed, let's say, you know, 6 inches, you'd be back there
every 3 days, right. Depending on the species of the tree, some trees grow 2 feet
right.
a year,
so,
but they're,
or more.
But they're footing the bill for more managed trimming that doesn't leave it looking awful. I mean,
well,
what's the problem with what they're
there's
doing?
There's no evidence in this case that it will look awful. If you think about it, there's no.
They have some photos of other areas that look pretty.
Well, sure, and I can show you photos of other areas that were trimmed that look just fine. And that's the point. That's not evidence in this case of anything. we all drive down the street and we see those and we go, oh my gosh. But those trees, we all know, will also fill in. Not every tree that's green and live is going to die because it's been trimmed, even severely trimmed. There's no evidence of that. The evidence in this case, and that's the point in this case, the evidence in this case, Dr. Russell says you have to take overhang. Council talks about the MPSC letter. The MPSC letter specifically tells the board to remove overhang, to remove it. If it's not there, it can't fall on the line. Council says green live trees, healthy live trees, are not affected by snow and ice. Really?
Depends on the tree, doesn't it?
Well, no
kidding. Birch trees, for instance, are very prone to snap off in ice storms.
Silver maples, certain types of real hardwoods, absolutely. Depends exactly on the species and the type of tree.
What remind me what types of trees these
are? Mostly volunteer silver maple in this yard.
And what are they prone to do?
They are prone to break.
In ice, with ice.
You know, we all saw the effects of 2013, and this isn't all about 2013. 2013 was a wake-up call that said you have to get back to your vegetation management, and you have to be assured that vegetation isn't going to take down lines. People's lives are affected. You have people who are on medical equipment. You have people who rely on electricity for life-saving measures. Downed power lines are not only inconvenient, but they're unsafe. They remain energized, and they're unsafe, even if they're drops to homes. Even if they're secondary, they're unsafe, and if they fall, if they come down and they're still charged, also they can actually cause outages up the line backwards up to the nearest transformer. The evidence in this case, as opposed to the emotion, as opposed to the just bald assertions, the evidence in this case is that taking overhang is best practices in the industry. That's the evidence in this case. I'm getting back to the Forster, to Mr. Forster, who is an arborist, to his statement. I never had the opportunity to depose him because, long story short, if this gets remanded, he will be deposed and there will be a different story. But the point is that he said, oh, you can end reduction prune. Well, that focuses on the tree.
Correct.
We're focused on our easement, on our plant, our equipment. We're focused on our lines. And that we get, that's the juxtaposition here. One or the other has to go. Okay, Dr. Russell says, no, you have to take the overhang to assure that those won't fall on those limbs. There is no evidence to rebut that. He says in the last, I think it's the last paragraph of his affidavit, end reduction pruning is an ineffective method to assure reliability and to avoid downed power lines. He also says in that affidavit that snow and ice, and therefore falling on vegetation and downed vegetation, is the predominant cause of power outages. This isn't a campaign by the board to go after a homeowner who resists. This is a campaign by the board to provide safe power, hardened, reliable power, safety to its own employees, safety to the neighborhood. It's a critical issue. So one last point. Council stands up here and says, well, the board's vegetation management is not evidence of the best practice in the industry. Dr. Russell specifically says it is evidence of best practice. But we'll admit that the board is out ahead a little bit. Consumers is not too far behind. Detroit Edison is not too far behind with their trimming. You've heard of some of the cases that are out there, Consumers and DTE, those trimming cases. And they're taking down overhead as well. The pamphlet that we attached, the MPSC says trim overhang. The pamphlet we attached shows a trim of overhang. The reason there are Vs is sometimes they have to create those Vs to get to take the overhang from over the line. It's not something the board likes to do, but it is something that's necessary. They have to do these on cycles. They have to clear back the vegetation. There is a thing called arcing. We wouldn't have a name for it if it didn't happen. It's called arcing. It occurs. And so what is going
on? It's tree-specific, too, isn't it?
It's more, it's more likely tree-specific. It's not, it can happen in a lot of different ways. I thought the analogy to what's going on in L.A. is completely lost, because that's a completely different situation. But one of the chief suspects there is arcing from power lines.
So okay. Can you answer my question about a date?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to not answer. Can you give it to me again?
The date that the V shape came into existence.
That the policy was adopted?
No, the V shaped power line, the secondary power line, that's the subject of the case.
Oh, okay. So let me just be clear. The V shape is just looking down at on the top, a two dimensional. One power line goes this way, and
right.
One power line goes that
Correct.
Way. So we believe it came into existence in 1919. We search our records. We can't prove that.
There was an affidavit that said it's generally the. What does generally the same?
Well, I'll come to that.
Okay.
Well, the first date where our records are good, and I'm going to digress. Don't let me forget this point. We know 1979 is a hard date for when that V-shape came to existence. And that's in Darren Bolin, I think, in his affidavit, but certainly in, I'm sorry, Darren Thalen, but it might also be in Dave Bolin's affidavit. And those documents are attached. Now, I need to speak real quick about those documents, because there's this whole question about dimensions and whether they're dimensionally accurate and so on. The answer is no, they're not intended to be dimensionally accurate. They're not actually even intended to properly show where they are on the property. What they do is they show what equipment is where, so that the technicians can look and see that they've got a pole at this location that carries this type of line. It's generally in the location. It's not specifically in the location. What there is so we know that was there in 1979, and there's no evidence that it wasn't. But what we also know is that if it wasn't, we would have records since 1979, and we'd gladly give up the records. It said, you know, it was there from 19. He said, while he was standing up here, it's been there for 100 years. He said it's been there since 1938, two different inconsistent things. He didn't talk about 1979, but we know for a fact that configuration existed as of 1979 and has existed since. With respect to the issue.
Well, what about the documentation that he supplied in his appendix that he alleged shows that it didn't exist in 2003?
I'm frankly confused by that. I didn't understand that.
Okay, thanks.
There were a few things I didn't understand. So it's been highly
contentious.
Pardon me?
As you said, this has been highly contentious.
Unnecessarily so. Yeah.
All right. Anything else?
I'm sure there's a lot more. There's a lot to address, but if we've exhausted the questions, I think we've addressed all of them in our brief, and we'll stand on our brief for the remainder.
Thank you.
Brown, some rebuttal?
Just to try to be very brief, highly contentious. I've heard that for 3 years. We're on a crusade. We hate the board, blah, blah, blah. Go look at the record, the people we actually interacted with, not opposing counsel, but their chief forester, Ashley Thiel. I asked him, what are they talking about? Have we been mean? No, I've been very pleasant, polite, contentious with opposing counsel. Yeah, maybe a little bit. Not with this nonsense about the war on a crusade. I'd ask the court to put that aside. I've heard a lot of testimony from opposing counsel this morning. Our maples in the back of our yard are susceptible to breaking. They're Norway maples. They're from Norway. There's nothing in the record saying those trees are susceptible to breaking from ice. Our arborist didn't make that finding. I don't think they're susceptible to breaking from ice if they're healthy. And that's what this case is about. We're not opposed to removing dead and limbs that are susceptible to breaking. We've been doing that. So a lot of testimony from opposing counsel. The wire running from the back pole to the beaches, that's not a line, that's a service drop. Then there's the secondary line that runs from that back pole, the red dot on page 17 of my brief, to the house. That's the secondary line. Off of that line, the white pole at page 17 is a service drop to the Wolgorskis. So there's really, there's one line, there's two service drops in this case. There's other things. If you go back to the back pole, the red pole, that line continues across the street. That's not relevant to anything in front of the court. The issues in front of this court, there's two service drops, one line.
So what is your evidence that it's less than 3 feet?
They measured it. I sat there, I just flabbergasted what I heard. Here's what happened. Yes, he tells the first half.
It looks close.
He tells right. The first third, he tells the last third, he skips the middle third. The first third of the story is when they were out there visiting our property, when we were trying to resolve this, trying to settle it, they noticed, their agent noticed, the problem over the fence, over the garage.
Right.
That's true. And then we go to mediation. The only thing we got, when you come out and measure it, they came out and measured it, and it comes out 34 and a half inches. Then he skips over that. That's their measurement. He skips over that. Then he tells the latter third that, God, we came out again, decided it was okay. But here's what he's doing. The service drop starts at the top of a pole, and then it's a service drop. It drops. It goes down. And as it goes down, it crosses directly, plainly, right through the middle, both garages, ours and the Wolgorskis. It drops down. So they came out at the end. What he's talking about is they come out at one point, and it's there. You can see the picture. It's in the brief. And they measured up here. I mean, it's plain as day. And they said, oh, if you go up to the top of the pole and you go down to Ferone's garage, that's whatever they said, 8 feet. Yeah, it is. That's not the issue. It drops down. And if something were to go wrong, what's it going to do? It's slack. It drops down. It's going to fall backwards. It's already over my garage. But if it were to break, it's off the Wolgorski's garage and it's on my garage, arcing. I don't buy into this arcing, but the top of my garage isn't a living tree. The top of my garage is, you know, flammable material. So that's where I think arcing would be more of a concern there. That's what's going to happen. So I don't know what he's talking about when he says that they've proven it's not over my garage. They proved it was. So there's that. If you look at page 17.
So did you plead about the neighbor's garage or just your own?
I don't think I have a standing to complain on their behalf, and they're not a party to this.
You don't have standing to complain
right.
about, and I think that was their position.
Well, their position is it doesn't go over my garage. What is he complaining about? It doesn't even impact
right.
him. But it will. It does go over my garage, and if it breaks, like it would in arcing, it's going to slack, it's going to fall backwards, and it's going to all be on my garage. It's not going to be on the Wolgorski's garage. That's gravity. You know, page 17, you know, you look at those schematics. Let me say one thing. Mr. Ferone said the wires have been going through through there for 100 years. I said they've been running power for 100 years in some configuration. It's their schematic. Where they're getting 1979 from is their schematic. If you look at that page 17, he talks about it not, well, it's not to scale. Well, I mean, you know, it's running east-west in the one, and it's running north-south in the other. It's plainly, there's a problem. There's a problem there. That's not a scale issue. That earlier, the one they're relying upon, is a different configuration.
And you can't tell me when this configuration went, other than sometime after, hypothetically, 2003?
Right, that's what I came up with. Again, I don't think it matters. I don't think you even need to get into that issue, prescriptive easement, because I don't believe there is no law in Michigan holding that a utility line is a prescriptive. If it sits there, ignored for 15 years or more, it becomes a prescriptive easement. That's what they're arguing.
Okay.
If you run a utility line, and walk away. And don't do anything with it for 15 years, which they admit they haven't done any trimming, they haven't shown any interest. It evolves. Everybody suddenly throughout Michigan have prescriptive easements.
So that top diagram on page 17 is their own schematic from 2003 that does not show the V-shaped.
Right. Right. So when he argues, well, it's been there since 1979, you have to ignore what you plainly see with your own eyes. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That case will be submitted.